Welcome to Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, a work of the Jesuits in Britain. I'm Julia, I'm in my early 30s and I used to live in a Jesuit young adult community. We all live hectic lives and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening both to us and around us. This podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. Every week I meet a new guest who tells me about something they experienced which changed their life forever. By talking about the things they wish they'd known, we'll explore the idea that God is in all things. And we'll talk about the part that faith plays in navigating life's challenges. Today I'm speaking to Andy. Andy works for the Jesuits and is based in Scotland. He also runs an Instagram account called The Lay Companion, where he shares his writings and reflections. In this conversation, he speaks about finding God in daily life and how sometimes that can be challenging when balancing family and work. Andy's way of finding God in the small moments is a gentle reminder to do that myself. So, Andy, how would you describe life growing up in Scotland?
So it was great. I loved growing up in Scotland, despite the weather. It was actually really pleasant and we played a lot of football and things outside. And I grew up in a place in the west of Scotland, which suffered from sectarianism, although I wasn't really aware of it as a child, because essentially we were kept separate. So I grew up never meeting a Catholic until I was in university, which might seem a bit odd to people who don't live in the west of Scotland, but it was just very divisive and it has got better, but it's still there. It still exists in some way. So I never thought about Catholicism. I never really thought too much about God growing up. I suppose by the time I was eight, although I was baptised in the Church of Scotland, by the time I was eight, I'd completely left and my family weren't practising anymore. So I just never gave it a thought and Catholicism just wasn't on my radar at all. And the only times we did hear about it were negative things. So, you know, I went to a football tournament when I was, I think I was eight or nine. And for some reason, we were told not to be friends with Catholics. Just as a big announcement at the end of the thing, just remember, don't be friends with Catholics, remove yourself from their presence, just generally don't be around them. And that was it. And it seemed a bit, it might seem a bit odd, but it was kind of normal. We got that sort of messaging all of the time. And I lived in quite an area where the Orange Walk and things like that were really prevalent. So every July there was always a lot of fighting and disruption, and seeing that as a child and knowing that it was related to religion in any way, it just made me completely close off to it. So there's, you know, I did have a very happy childhood growing up, and I loved kind of growing up in Scotland. There was a lot to do. But there was always that side of society that just didn't merge well with each other. And it kind of plays out in football. You see it with Rangers and Celtic, where the kind of two fans just clash with each other a lot. And it's not all of them, but, you know, there is a proportion of people who just see it as a way to divide the society rather than coming together. So I didn't grow up with a very good impression of religion at all.
So then when was your first real encounter with Catholics?
So when I went to university, I bumped into, actually, I ended up marrying the first Catholic that I met. So I bumped into Catherine, who's my wife, and we became really close friends. And I really, she seemed to have a really strong faith and I just didn't know where it came from. And she spoke to me a bit about God and I started to open up a little and I thought, you know what, I'll try going back to the Church of Scotland and see how that goes. So I went back for a Sunday service and I just didn't feel anything. And then around that time, my dad was diagnosed with lung cancer. And so my whole world was really in turmoil. And the person I confided in most was Catherine. And she would speak to me about the Catholic Church and how they approached things. And she asked me to go to Mass one day and I said, absolutely not. I can't I can't be seen going into a Catholic church. It's just the furthest thing I can do. She said, Bill, if you can't do that, why don't you come to this place, Kirfinn Grotto, which is a Lourdes shrine in Scotland, and it's a lovely place. It's very scenic. There's a glass chapel there. There's just lots to kind of do in terms of your spirituality there. But essentially, I just went for a walk, and an overwhelming sense of peace came over me, something that I hadn't felt before, just being in that environment. And I thought, well, maybe there's something to this that I'm not quite getting, or maybe I would get that again if I went back to the Church of Scotland. So I did, and again, I got nothing. Now, I don't want this to sound as if I'm being rude or anything. I think God works in certain ways for certain people, and for some people that will be the Church of Scotland, and that's perfectly fine. But for me, it wasn't sitting right with me. So that's why I found my way to the Catholic Church. But my dad's lung cancer became terminal, and I had told Catherine about what was happening, and she invited me to Mass. And for some reason, I decided to go, and I was even scared to bless myself with holy water, because we weren't supposed to do things like this. So eventually went into the church, and I had this overwhelming sense of peace again, and this energy that kind of went right through me. And I just felt, I don't know how to describe it, just as if I was being held in some way that I'd never experienced before. And I was watching the Mass unfold before me and all the beauty of it. And I just was in complete awe, really. And I didn't want to leave the church that night, but I didn't have a clue what was going on. Like, you know, I'd never been to a Catholic Mass before. There was people standing up, sitting down, shaking hands. Like, I had no idea what was happening. And when people were doing the sign of peace, I was actually saying, how are you doing, instead of peace be with you, because I had no idea what I was supposed to say. But I guess I found a place where I felt completely at home. I was just aware of a presence I'd never experienced before, and I didn't want to lose that. And that was probably one of the most profound experiences I've ever had in a church. The next day, my dad actually passed away after that, and I found myself going to the church and just feeling consolation in a way that I'd never experienced before. It was tough and it was hard. I'm not saying it suddenly made life easier, but there was a sense of God with me in this, and not being on my own, that I just hadn't found before.
I was thinking before when you said about some people find God in the Church of Scotland and other people find God in the Catholic Church. We often talk before on the podcast about people God finds us where we are and finds a place for us that fits with us, so that it's great, and particularly in that time of like what was a very tough situation for you, that you were able to find that consolation in church for you. So was that it? Was after that you then were signed up to the Catholic Church, or did it take a little bit longer?
No, it took about 2 years after that, because I thought I could go to Mass in secret, and I thought that would be enough, and I thought, you know, I could do this. I could just come along every Sunday or any day I wanted to go, really, and sit there and just watch. But then the draw of the Eucharist became too strong. And, you know, once you realise that that's the actual body and blood of Christ, I mean, how can you not want that? How can you? You know, I fought it as hard as I could, but ultimately I was never going to win that fight. So I eventually, after a couple of years, decided to do RCIA. But not a lot of my friends, there was a few friends who didn't like the fact that I was becoming Catholic. And when we were playing kind of five-a-sides and things like that at football, you know, they were starting to kind of make comments and put harder challenges in. And so it became very obvious that they really didn't want me to go through with converting. And ultimately, those people are no longer in my life, but that's just one of those things. I've got plenty of people in my life who did support me and who were very happy and who were there every step of the way. So, you know, it's just one of these things, I suppose.
And if someone had told you at that moment that you were going to end up working for the Jesuits, would you have believed them?
I wouldn't even have known who the Jesuits were. at that point. And well, that's not strictly true. I remember one episode of Father Ted where they talk about the Jesuits having the papacy wrapped up, which I didn't really know. Now I find quite funny, but didn't know what they were talking about at the time. But yeah, I'd never heard of them. I never planned on working in the church at all. I went to university to be a PE teacher. That's all I wanted to do when I was younger. That's everything that I'd planned in doing. When I was at university, I started to fall out of love with PE teaching, I suppose, and I worked in a area working with people with additional support needs and setting up clubs in North and South Lanarkshire for children with disabilities and autism specifically to play extracurricular sports, because at that time, the kind of early 2000s, there weren't many opportunities for people to do that. So that's what I did. And that was funded by Awards for All and things like that. And eventually the funding, you know, they only fund for a certain amount of years, and that ran out. And then I needed to get a job, and I'd finished university and I didn't want to do PE teaching anymore. So I didn't really know what I was going to do. And then I decided for some stupid reason stupid in the sense that I had no money to propose to Catherine. So you need money to get married, obviously. So it was, I realised I needed to get a job and get a job quickly. So I ended up becoming a baker, and I worked in a bakery for 2 years. And then the job came up for a youth provincial worker for the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate. So I went to the interview, which was the day before my wedding. And I guess I was just thinking, well, if I don't get it, I've still got my wedding to look forward to, and I'll still have a good party and so on. And I'm getting to marry the love of my life. So it, you know, I won't be that disappointed if I don't get it. But anyway, we ended up going to Medjugorje on our honeymoon, and I was phoned 2 days in to offer me the job. So they must have liked me at the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate. So I got the job there. And incidentally, my wife, who works as a lecturer, she got her job the next day as well. So it was a bit of a miracle that we were just married, and then we both got these two jobs to come back home to, which was really wonderful. But I worked for them for 4.5 years, setting up all sorts of youth ministry and young adult ministry across the UK and Ireland. But I had to do a lot of travelling, so I would be like a week in Edinburgh, a week in London, a week in Dublin, a week in Anglesey, maybe a bit of time in Crewe, and then they'd send me to Lourdes, and then to Spain, and just all over the place. And I was away from home for about 6 months out of the year, which was quite a lot and hard enough, because my wife is my best friend and I missed her. But then we started having children, and that just becomes even more jarring when you have to leave them. And I had just done a young adult retreat, and I was on the train back from Crewe. And my only son at this point, George, was on the phone, and he just said, "Daddy gone." And I just thought, I can't do this anymore. I can't keep leaving. As much as the work is great and I enjoy it, I'm supposed to be his father and I'm supposed to be there for him. And that's who God has given me to look after. So as well as my ministry, I need to give that attention. And that made me apply for the a job that I'd seen, where it was for a pastoral associate with the Sacred Heart Church, which was the Jesuits. So I looked at that and kind of wrote the application on the train. And then I was invited to a kind of an evening for youth and young adult ministry by the Archbishop at the time, who wanted to look at all the youth and young adult activities in the Archdiocese and then see how we could work cohesively together. And then I went to the interview, and again, they must have liked me, and I got the job without any problems really. But I did have a lot of experience of working in church, working in parishes, developing programs, and so it was kind of an easy fit for me to move into the Sacred Heart. And I've been there for 10.5 years, and it's, you know, things have changed over the time, and the job has changed over the many years, but it's very fulfilling, and I get to do a lot of good, and I get to help a lot of people. People get mixed up with what my role is. because in Scotland, I think I might be the only lay person that does this job. So they can't tell if I'm a priest or if I'm a deacon or am I training to be a priest. And I'm like, no, I'm none of that. I'm married and I have children. So I get the kind of best of both worlds. I get to live some form of religious kind of life and also have a family life as well.
So you were talking about being on those trains and being away from your family, and it sounds like you were very busy. How did you spend time with God in that busyness?
It wasn't easy, actually. Sometimes I really struggled to, especially when you're tired, and to try and spend a bit of time when you're moving around so much, it's quite difficult to find a bit of time to pray. But I was using actually the Pray As You Go app and doing imaginative contemplation using that, which I found really helpful. And there was one incident that I had during prayer where it was the road to Emmaus or Amos or however you're supposed to say it. I keep getting corrected. But I was walking and I'm picturing the scene and I'm getting really, really into the, I can smell everything, I can see everything, I can almost, touch the environment, and it's very vivid, and I'm having a conversation with Jesus, and then we get to the house and we start to eat dinner. And then at the end of it, I say to Jesus, well, I suppose it's time for you to go, because that's what happens. Jesus, they recognise Jesus in the breaking of the bread, and then he's gone. And I said, I suppose it's time for you to go. And he said, Andrew, why would I go? I said, well, that's the story goes. And Jesus said, well, this isn't a story, this is your life, and I'm with you through it all. So I'm not going to leave, I'm going to be with you. Even in these hard journeys, even in these different roads and routes you have to take, I'm going to be there. And I kind of got a lot of consolation from that prayer. And I found it really profound and really life-giving. And it just made me see God and the difficulties, that God was there with me in it.
Powerful an image to have as well. I know when I've done it, imaginative contemplation, just having Jesus respond to you is just really uplifting in so many different ways. So Andy, you were talking before about being a lay companion. For most people out there, what does that mean?
So essentially, the reason I chose the lay companion is first and foremost, I'm a lay person, but the establishment of the kind of Jesuits were St. Ignatius and his companions, and so I thought it was a fitting name because I was going to be writing about and kind of making content based on Ignatian spirituality, and because it's made such a difference in my life, I wanted to share that with other people. And so I set up an Instagram account probably about a month ago now actually, and it's been doing really well, and a lot of people have been in touch to see how much they've enjoyed my reflections, how much they've enjoyed being guided through prayer. And so the reason I kind of started it was because I really like writing. It's one of my favourite things to do, and I'm really keen to show people how you can find God in your daily life. So one of the incidences that I had was my youngest son, Harry, is autistic and isn't really, he's got a communication delay. He does say a few words, but it's very few and far between. But it makes life challenging in some ways, because the other two boys wanted to go to the cinema to see the Mario movie. But Harry just can't last the whole time. So we didn't want to ruin the experience for them, but at the same time, we wanted to give Harry an experience as well. So I told my wife to take the other two, George and Jacob, and take them, and I would stay with Harry, and we would watch Disney Cars. And it's one of Harry's favourite films, and he sings a lot of the songs and things in it. And we just lay on the couch, and he fell asleep, and he kind of snuggled into me, and I kind of nodded off as well, I think. And I woke up at the soundtrack, and it was the words, "You finally start to see you're living for someone else." And that just really spoke to me. And I felt as if God was talking to me directly through a Disney film, somewhere I wasn't expecting to see God at all. And yet there he was in the middle of it. And I just felt so grateful. I had a sense of consolation, and I just felt so happy to have the gift that Harry is, and that God trusts me with such a precious little boy to look after and care for. And that's also the way that God looks after us and cares for us. You know, he's always there, and he knows what we need before we even need to ask, essentially. So after that experience, I thought, I need to write this down and share it with people, because I thought, if I can just give someone a glimpse of what, you know, where you could perhaps see God when you're not expecting, it might make people's awareness become, you know, more vivid in other areas of life where you're not expecting to see God.
And I think that's really important for people to be able to see that, to read the writings you've been doing, because it's so easy for us just to go through life and not see God in our day to day. But it's only when we start to like reflect and think about it and give space for that, do we actually see the impact that God has, or the moments that he like talks to us specifically. I know for me, it's one of the things of the examen, which is the Ignatian prayer, that at the end of the day, it's really helpful because I can reflect back and see how God has been speaking to me in those moments. Has that helped you form your faith and your sense of mission?
The examen is highly important to me. And again, similar to you, I do it at the end of each day, because you don't, you know, you can try as hard, and sometimes you are aware of God in the moment, but sometimes it's only when you look back, you see God's hand at play, and you see where he is and where he's been. And so I like to use the examen at the end of the night. Sometimes I need to do it, you know, that stage before you get too tired and you fall asleep, because I don't want to fall asleep during it, but that kind of 10 minutes before you get too tired. And I feel by identifying God in my day, it gives me a sense of mission. It gives me a sense of where I need to go next. And I can then ask for that at the end of the examen to guide me the next day.
I slightly laughed at your doing it 10 minutes before you're going to fall asleep, because I've been recently doing an examen course. So it's praying every day, but over 6 weeks, and there being a particular focus. And in one particular week, 3 nights in a row, I tried to pray the particular examen and fell asleep before I got even halfway through it. And at the end of the week, I was like, I think I'm going to take the hint that I might need rest.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about how it's easier sometimes when you're in those kind of what are called mountaintop moments, where you're like doing a Camino, where you find it easier to hear God's voice, or God carries you through, as you mentioned. But then when we're back down on earth, on like our daily life, hearing God can be a lot harder. So with that in mind, how does your prayer, if you're being honestly, how does that look every day? Is it very same, or is it sometimes a bit challenging?
It is very much the same, but that doesn't mean it's not challenging. Sometimes it's hard just to find a minute, which is my main problem. Although God often has a way of stretching time. Once you start to try and commit to things, you know, you end up finding the time somewhere. So usually I pray at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, and this isn't a plug for Praise You Go, but usually if I'm driving to work, I'll listen to Praise You Go. That can be helpful, but I think I spend a lot of my day talking to God. I feel as if I get answers and I get a response, and that helps me to make good positive decisions. It's hard to explain, I think, but I'm not sure if I stop praying. I know sometimes it's intentional prayer, but most of the day I'm praying or I'm thinking about God, or I'm thinking about how God is active in a moment. Now, it's not always easy, as I said, but it's kind of second nature almost at times.
And do you, because we started this conversation talking about the role of like Catholicism in your life, and how originally it wasn't a part of your life and then you converted. And obviously one of the things about Catholicism is that we go to weekly at least Mass, or quite often daily Mass. So how does going to Mass play a role in your spiritual life?
So funnily enough, this can be quite challenging, which might sound ridiculous, but I go to Mass with my family, and my youngest son is autistic, as I said earlier, and a lot of the time is spent just making sure he's okay. And so I'm physically in the building and I'm there, but there's so much going on that I'm just not getting fed at all. In fact, there's a funny story. Harry, during the consecration, who doesn't speak much, when the whole church was silent, started shouting, "Brush your teeth," which was, you know, was great. It doesn't say much, so I was actually just delighted that he was speaking. But at the exact worst time he could have done it, which was perfect. But there's always something going on at Mass. I'm always on hand. Either it's taking Jacob to the toilet because he needs a toilet break, or there's Harry who's being entertained or something. And so I don't get much from Mass there. And then I go to work on a Sunday night. We have a young adult Mass in Edinburgh, which is really well attended and is continuing to grow. But again, I'm working. I'm there. I'm in the building. And Mass is unfolding before me, but I've got things to do and I'm concentrating on things. And so I can't really focus on what's actually happening. And again, through imaginative prayer, when I was doing a spiritual accompaniment course, actually, we were doing the feeding of the 5,000. I was one of the disciples. I was helping Jesus, getting the baskets ready to feed people. And I was about to take the basket and then go and then give it to the people that were there. And then Jesus grabbed me on the shoulder and said, "Stop, Andy, you need to stop." And I turned around and said, "Why?" He said, "Well, you can't feed anyone if you're not feeding yourself." And that just really struck me. And I couldn't get that out of my head, that Jesus is saying, "Remember, you have to feed yourself." And it's true. It's true in everything, really. You know, if you're not sustaining yourself, you can't really help others in the best way that you can. So because of that experience, I know that I need to carve out time for myself and perhaps go to Mass during the week when it's just me. Because even if I go to Mass at work, sometimes people know who I am, so they'll come and talk to me, and they'll come and ask things, and so I'm not really in that mode. So I need to go to another church sometimes and just sit myself and just sit with God. And sometimes that's all I'm doing. It doesn't necessarily have to be a Mass, but sometimes it's just sitting there in God's presence, placing myself before God, before the Trinity, letting God look upon me and trying to do his will, ultimately, to do what God needs me to do.
I think I completely understand what you just said, because I'm quite involved in the parish at Farm Street. But sometimes I go to the Mass early in the parish near where I live, at 8 a.m. where nobody really knows me, because I know it's the one where I'm most likely to be able to pray myself and not be like running around, this needs to happen, that needs to happen. But it's the one where I can come be fed by God, rather than, as you've described it, you feeding everybody as well. So how do you make, other than going to church or like in the middle of the week in a parish that you aren't known at, how do you make space for God whilst juggling your family and your faith and your work life as well?
That's a good question. I suppose I don't really stop. I try to see God in everything. And so that it can be really hard to separate any of it, because ultimately God has given me everything that I have, and you know, he's given me a wonderful family to look after and be part of, and I'm in a wonderful job where I get to help people every day. And so I find it really difficult to separate those things out. Like my kind of, a lot of people talk about a spiritual life and, you know, having to work on their spiritual life, but really that's just their life in general. It's all part, it's all connected. It's not like you can separate it off and say, well, I'm being spiritual for 10 minutes here and then the rest of the day I'm just going to do what I like. It really is all interconnected.
So what advice? Because I was talking with our producer beforehand of that. I feel like I spend a lot of time in my spiritual direction going, oh, I just feel rubbish that I'm so busy and I struggle a bit with finding time for prayer. So what advice would you give to somebody in that situation?
I suppose just trying to build it into your daily routine in some way would be helpful. Like, if you've only got 10 minutes in the morning, well, make that a good 10 minutes and don't worry so much the rest of the day that you're not doing enough. I actually recommend people to use Pray As You Go if they're really busy, because it's all there for you and really easy to access. And sometimes I would just say to people just to pause and slow down for 5 minutes and just place yourself in God's presence and just imagine God looking at you and not having to say anything or do anything, just be aware of God looking at you.
So what do you wish you'd known earlier about experiencing God in the everyday?
I suppose what I wish I'd known was that God was active and present in all of our experiences. If we would just notice a bit more, that it would be easier. But, you know, it's part of the journey as well, I suppose. But I wish I'd learned about Ignatian spirituality much earlier, because it's something that I've found really, really liberating, actually, to know that you can find God not just in churches, but, you know, as I sit and look out the window at the tree and the life that's moving around there, that I can see it in my children as a father when I'm doing things that are just kind of, not mundane in the sense boring, but just everyday things. And you know, if you just pause to see and take a moment, you will see God in it. Like, one of the stories I have was when I was taken, and I wrote about it as well on the Instagram page, but my middle son, Jacob, one night I was putting him to bed and I was going to go in and I could smell my aftershave, and he'd sprayed it all over his bed and all over him. And I said, well, why have you done that? Not quite as calmly as that, but I was like, why have you done that? He says, when I smell that smell, I know that you're there and I know that I'm safe. And I thought, even in that moment as he said it, I realised that scent of God that we're craving, that we just need to know that he's there and that he's with us in those moments. And that Jacob was getting ready because the lights were going out and it was going to be dark, but he knew that if he could smell me, he was safe. So when there are shadows in your life, if you bring them out and show God them, then he can touch them and make you see that he's with you in it.
That's such a powerful image of your, like, son spraying the perfume. What are you grateful for?
This is going to sound really boring, but it's really, really not. I'm really grateful for my family, for the people God has given me in my life. I was lucky enough to marry my best friend and have three wonderful children. And it's challenging, but it's the best thing that I've ever done in my life. And I'm just so grateful to God for the gifts that he's given me. Each child is a blessing. And it's great to see their different personalities and their different interests and so on come through. I'm just really grateful to have a lovely family and to have the job that I have, working with a parish community and helping them develop their spiritual life and their prayer life. I guess I'm just grateful for my life in general, because it's one that I'm walking with God and I can feel God in every step.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure to be with you today.
Thanks for listening to Things I Wish I Knew. I know this conversation is going to stay with me because of Andy's real honesty about finding time for God, but also how God shows up for him. For example, a gentle reminder from Jesus in an imaginative contemplation about feeding yourself. How about you? We'd love to hear how Andy's story resonated with you. And why not also tell us if you're facing an experience you wish you knew how to look at differently? It might just be something we can help with. You can find out more about this and other themes at thinkingfaith.org. Thank you again for listening. I hope you'll join me again next time on Things I Wish I Knew.